Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off. A good deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today, on the 25th anniversary of that fantastic day in 1991, I'm delighted to be welcomed, to be joined even by an absolute Motherwell legend, a man that played through broken ribs, a ruptured spleen, double vision, all to help Motherwell towards Cup glory in 91. Yeah, of course, I'm joined by Ali Maxwell. Ali, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
Well, we'll talk about that fantastic day in May of 91 a wee bit later on, but what we'd do is I'd like to start back at the start of your career at Motherwell, a career that spanned over 130 games. You joined in 1981 from Fir Park Boys Club, and I'm pretty sure that would have included guys like Gary McAllister and Brian McClure, is that right?
Yeah, David Hay signed me in November 1981, and at that time, first couple of seasons I was part-time, and Gary McAllister and I were both on the same Fir Park Boys team. There was another guy called Davey Duncan. And we're all on the same Fir Park team, and all three of us signed for Motherwell within a couple of months of each other. Brian McClure was one of the part-time players at that time. And if anybody can ever believe that Brian McClure was ever part-time, then he was. He was at Motherwell with me at that time. Those were three great players that were produced at that time.
It must have been particularly evident, even at that early stage, that the club were more than capable of bringing through a number of very high-quality talent.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to give credit to the staff, the youth staff at that time, youth coaches at that time, because unfortunately for Motherwell fans, Motherwell was known mostly as a provincial club. And we raised great players, and unfortunately we had to sell them on, to balance the books. And obviously Brian McClure moved on to fantastic things eventually to Manchester United, and Gary McAllister went on to have a fabulous career down south as well. But unfortunately we created all the staff created some great young talent, and unfortunately we had to sell them on. We were known for having great young players.
Despite joining in 1981, it took you almost 3 years to make your debut in April 1984 against Aberdeen.
That's right.
What was it like after waiting for a fair amount of time to make that breakthrough to finally get your chance in the first team? And
I was only 16 at the time when I joined Motherwell. You're never going to tell me that a goalkeeper is ready to play in the Scottish Premier League when he's 16. I was fairly level-headed that way. My father always made sure that, you're here to learn as well. And you got to understand, back in those days, there was no such thing as goalkeeper coaches. The first time I really had a goalkeeper coach I was almost 20 years of age before I really had a goalie coach, or 21 years of age before I had a goalkeeping coach. I think my development was a little bit stemmed by the fact that, you know, there wasn't individual coaches at that time for goalkeeping coaching. Not specialised professionals. I mean, there are coaches back then that had a fair bit of knowledge about it, but not really what you would say professional goalkeeper coaches that you have nowadays. So, you know, it stemmed my development, I think, a little bit. But if anybody knows me, I'm tenacious, and, you know, once I want something, I go after it. And I was patient enough, not all the time, but I was patient enough. And as you see, I eventually made my debut at Pittodrie. You know, and I think we lost that day. I think it was either 1-0 or 2-0, which wasn't a bad scoreline considering they were a major European team at that time. So it was a great honour to make my debut then.
You mentioned about the goalkeeping coaches there. Strangely enough, I was up at the Motherwell Academy last night at Braidhurst, and I was watching boys that were maybe 7 or 8 years of age working with goalkeeping coaches. And is that fundamental to developing young players, even at that early age, that they are taken aside and they've got specialist training?
Well, absolutely. Where I work in Phoenix, Arizona, I'm the director of the goalkeeping program there, and I have 60 goalkeepers in my program. We start them at 6 or 7 years of age, you know, teaching them the basics and teaching them to have a love for that position, which is not always easy. So, you know, but I'm very privileged to work with some really, really good young goalkeepers in the United States. And it's, you know, I just wish that I could have got the training at 6 or 7 years of age, as a, you know, from a professional goalie coach that these kids are getting nowadays.
The club suffered the disappointment of relegation very soon after your debut. You played a further two games under Bobby Watson in a team that was already relegated from the Premier League.
Yeah.
To have just made your debut and then play a few further games for a side already relegated, how much of a disappointment was that for you? Or was the fact that you were a young guy just kind of getting his first opportunity, did that kind of quell the disappointment?
I think it did a little bit. Obviously, you don't want the club to be relegated because it brings in a lot of different factors, you know, including financial problems that the club would have, because, you know, the club needs to be in the Premier League or the top league at that point in time. But I looked upon it as, I kind of looked upon it selfishly as an opportunity that I could maybe get some more games in the first division, you know, to continue my development. I mean, I was still very young back then, and I always knew that there would probably be another goalkeeper come in that I'd have to fight for. And it took me a while to get my consistency into my game. But then again, you know, goalkeepers don't really develop fully until they're into their early 20s. You know, so I kind of looked upon it as a chance for me to maybe get some more games under my belt. But maybe that was a naive young person's thought process, but that's just how I felt at that time.
You talked about competition there, and that's a kind of common trait of your career at Fir Park right up until the late 80s. But you played the first half of the 1984-85 season before Tommy McLean opted with the experience of John Gardner for the second half of the season. Was that a bit of a setback after being given your first kind of run in the team?
No, I mean, obviously you would want to play, but you have to be realistic and you have to be consistent, and you know that there's only one goalkeeper can play, so you always knew there was going to be competition for places. And I think, you know, John was, as you say, very experienced. I think he came down from Dundee United. And, you know, he was a very experienced goalkeeper, a good lad. And I got on well with him. But I think I pushed him so hard that I think even his performances became inconsistent after a while. You know, so you know, I looked at it more as more of a, you know, a chance for me to even step my game up a little bit more and try and just become that more consistent, which is probably a young goalkeeper's biggest flaw, is consistency of performances. And you know, I didn't take it hard. I just took it as a, you know, a kick in the butt to say, okay, you got to work harder.
How pleasing was it to see the club return to the top flight in such a short period of time? You've seen it in even the modern day, where teams go down and sometimes they go down again, or they become settled.
I mean, it was a fantastic feeling to be involved with that. And to be perfectly honest with you, it happened twice in my career. Not many people know that. But when I joined Dundee United from Rangers in 96, Dundee United had just been relegated. And I obviously went into Dundee United side, and we got back into the Premier League at the first time of asking, which was you know, not an easy trait to do when you get relegated from the Premier League, to go back straight up into the Premier League at the first time of asking. So I obviously did it with Motherwell in the 80s, and then obviously did it with Dundee United in the 96-90, I think it was 96-97 season. So you know, I was involved with that twice, so I keep even having to remember myself I did that. So it was a very pleasing, you know, because you want to play against the best teams, obviously, and you want to try and put your wits against the best players in Scotland and the best teams in Scotland.
Is there also that danger that when you are relegated, that you can almost become a Championship side as it is now, or a League One side? I'm thinking off the top of my head, St Mirren, who I find it hard to remember were actually in the top league last season. They went down, they struggled this season, and now I don't think next season they'll be considered as favourites to come back up either. They're almost slowly been integrated into the Championship rather than looking as contenders.
And I agree with that, because St Mirren are obviously, they should be in the Premier League. They've got a great setup, and they should be in the Premier League. But, you know, obviously, when you, as a club goes down into the lower leagues, you can't afford to pay the wages to the players the same salaries as you would when you're in the Premier League. So therefore, you're probably forced to sell some of your better players, you know, and pay slightly lower wages to players, which means you probably don't get the same standard of player. And therefore, it becomes very difficult to get back into the Premier League when you may not have had your best players, because you've had to sell them on. So it's a kind of vicious circle, to be perfectly honest with you. You can't go into the first division and pay Premier League wages, you know, because the club just can't operate that way. But then if you sell your best players, how do you get back into the Premier League? So it is a vicious circle, and clubs over the years have fell foul to that. You know, and that's why it was very important for Motherwell to get back into the Premier League as soon as possible. You know, and it was always, you know, we were always, unfortunately, one of the two or three favourites to go down each year, because we were such a small club. But, you know, there was a lot of great character in the Motherwell teams back then.
Come back to yourself personally, you remained understudy to John Gardner until the 1986-87 season, where after a Scottish Cup tie, you replaced him and played every game for the rest of that season.
Yep.
So your hard work did pay off, and did you feel kind of vindicated for hanging about and working hard? You eventually got your reward for your hard work?
Well, the thing that people won't know about me is I'm very, very loyal to the clubs that I played for. Not enough a lot of people really think about this, but I signed with Davy Hay in November 1981, and I was still contracted to Motherwell until the end of season 92, when I joined Rangers. So I was actually a professional with Motherwell for 11 years, and you know, I never broke a contract. I left Motherwell, unfortunately, at that time, but my contract was already up, and I think the club had an option on me for a year, which is why I went down to Liverpool on loan for a little bit before joining Rangers at the end of that season. You know, so I was very loyal to Motherwell. I was there for 11 years. Didn't get a testimonial. And, you know, that was a bit unfortunate because the contract broke down after the cup final. I worked hard. Every club I've gone to, I've did my contract. I went to Rangers for 3 years, saw out my 3 years at Dundee at Rangers, went to Dundee United, had a 3-year contract, fulfilled that contract, went to Morton on a 3-year contract, fulfilled that contract. So I was never going to go anywhere just because there was another goalkeeper came into Motherwell. That's not in my nature. You know, once I'm committed to someone, I'm committed to them. And, you know, I spent 11 years with Motherwell and never wanted to leave, to be perfectly honest with you. So I find myself, you know, I've always been a Motherwell fan. My dad grew up as a Motherwell fan. I went to all the Motherwell games when I was young. And it's just a great story for a young kid like myself going into Firth Park Boys Club for 4 or 5 years, joining as a professional in 81 and eventually leaving the club and I think it was May of 1992. So, you know, I was never going to leave just because I had competition.
That competition continued in the form of Cammy Duncan, who again came in, got a chance, and yet again it was another goalkeeper you, for want of a better expression, had to see off. You bought your time, you were loyal, as you've already mentioned. And then you got that opportunity again. You kept a clean sheet and you returned to the side. The 1-0 win over Dundee in December 1988. And then from that point on, you played every game for the remainder of that season.
Yeah. Again, it just shows you the older you get, you tend to get a little bit more experience. And we've seen it in the past with a lot of goalkeepers, where, especially young goalkeepers, where they'll bring them in, give them a couple of games and put them out the side again, and then bring them back in. And it's just it's a way of, I mean, managers have to take a little bit of credit for that as well, because they're the ones that have to pick the side, and they kind of know the players better than anybody. You know, and although they might not explain to you personally on a day-to-day basis why they're doing it, you know, they obviously had a plan, and they knew I had talent, and they were trying to nurture it. And sometimes for a young goalkeeper especially, it's important to bring them out of the side, to bring them back down to earth again and get them, keep them working hard on their game and keep, you know, working on their focus and working on their consistency. So, you know, I was never scared of a challenge. I never shied away from a challenge, and I never will.
Just actually looking at these stats, a good friend of the podcast, Andrew Patterson, provided me with a kind of detailed look at your Motherwell career. And actually, after that Dundee game, you played in featured in every match right up until the Scottish Cup final in 1991. So that would have been your most prolonged run in the team. And what a run it was. The team only had won 2 games following that win against Dundee, and things really turned around. There must have been some concern that the team would drop out the top flight again at that point.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever listen to what Tommy McLean says, you know, the squad of players that he always brought in, whether it was a cup final squad or a group of players before that, always had good character and always had a great work ethic. And players don't really, when they're playing, they don't really think about the relegation aspect of it. It's really only brought up when, you know, it's in the media or, you know, the gaffer turns around and says, hey, by the way, this is a 6-pointer today. And then you kind of know that how important it is. But we tried to keep away from looking at league tables and league positions and stuff like that. You know, we just tried to, as soon as we stepped on the field, that was it. We wanted to give our best, and we wanted to make sure we won every game if possible, you know. You know, and I think by that time, Motherwell started on a run of not really being afraid of the big two, you know. I can never remember stats because I'm getting too old, but, you know, our record against Rangers and Celtic over those last few couple of seasons was actually not a bad record. You know, I always felt as though I had some good success against Rangers and Celtic playing for Motherwell. So, You know, I think that's the key, that we're starting to become not afraid of anyone. And once you step onto the field and you're not afraid of the opposition, I think that gives you heart and that gives you the desire to go on and not really worry about relegation.
Well, that certainly showed in the first full season you had as a goalkeeper at Fir Park when the club beat Rangers in the midweek of October 1989. That meant they actually topped the Premier League table, and that must have marked a huge, significant turnaround since being relegated to the First Division, coming back up, and then obviously showing that we were an established top flight side.
Oh yeah, and it all goes down to confidence. Once a club starts getting results against Rangers and Celtics, maybe not so much at Parkhead or Ibrox, but certainly at Fir Park, making it very difficult for teams like that, because, you know, the way we looked at it, if we pick points up against Rangers and Celtic, we will gain ground on the rest of the field, because you know that, you know, Rangers, once they get beaten by Motherwell, are not going to turn around and get beaten the next week, you know. You know, so we always seem to pick up points against Rangers and Celtic, where the teams that were around about us in the league tended not to pick up points, and I think those are points that you don't expect. You know, and it gave us a lot of confidence. You know, when you can compete and play against Rangers and Celtic at Fir Park and beat them, then, you know, the rest of it becomes, I wouldn't say easy to play against, but it certainly gives you more confidence and a little bit more heart to go into the rest of those games and get the results that you need.
We'll move on and talk about the 1990-91 season, which was memorable for so many reasons. And the focus when we discuss this will obviously be on the cup run, but in the league as well, there was some special moments. And I think a lot of supporters look back and the build-up to the Scottish Cup final and that 3-0 win over Rangers at Fir Park is a real indicator that the team was ready to step up and to claim glory. How significant was that, a Rangers team going for the league yet again, coming to Fir Park and not only being beaten, but beaten comprehensively?
Yeah, I remember that. Actually, I remember that game very well. It was one of those days that I felt personally that nobody was going to beat me. I don't know why, I just had that gut feeling that day that nobody was going to score against me. You know, I remember, I think I made a save from a point-blank header from Mark Haley in the second half, and I just went, these guys are not going to score against me today. And it just seemed that every time we went up the park against Rangers, we either created a great chance or we scored. And obviously Dougie Arnott scored a couple of great goals that day as well. And that was an all-round comprehensive performance against Rangers that day. And the reason I remember it so well is that the Rangers players, who all knew me at that time, came up to us and said, thanks a lot, now we've got to go to Ibrox and beat Aberdeen at Ibrox to win the league. So that was, I think Rangers, to be perfectly honest with you, I think Rangers thought that that was the day they were going to win the championship. And I think they maybe went into it with a little bit of, you know, this shouldn't be too difficult, and, never rule us out of anything, you know. And we really did give them a torrid time that day. So, that was a great performance. It was a great boost for the players' confidence going into the cup final.
Looking back over the years, even in my time supporting Motherwell, there's many teams that have been going to Fir Park looking for a result, and they've come unstuck, perhaps by underestimating the team or underestimating their surroundings. But when you go to Fir Park and there's a big crowd and a good atmosphere, it's been proven that it's a very difficult place to go, hasn't it?
Well, the thing about it was that the fans are so close to the field. You know, it's a little bit different now, but that little concrete wall along the shed end was only like 6 feet from the edge of the field. So the atmosphere in there was terrific. You know, and obviously the low shed ceiling created such an echo across the field that, it was a great place to play and a great atmosphere to play in, especially when the big clubs came to Motherwell. But, you know, we were always, I don't know why we were called this, but we were always called a provincial club in the media. I don't even know what that means, to be perfectly honest with you, but it kind of sounded disrespectful in a way. You know, and I think most people came to Motherwell said, you know, they don't have many big-time stars, you know. They don't have many big international players. You know, they have one or maybe two. It shouldn't be too difficult. And they forget about the closeness that we had as a group of players and the friendship that we had on and off the field. We were a very, very close bunch of guys, and I think we showed it on the field as well.
We'll get to the cup run in 91, and it will go down in legend. It's been talked about in great detail just now because it obviously is the 25th anniversary, so very relevant. Aberdeen, the holders in the first round, Pittodrie, horrendous place to go at the best of times. To knock out the cup holders really did set a stall out for the rest of the campaign.
I think that was the day that we thought we could win the Scottish Cup. I mean, to knock out Aberdeen, as you say, they were the holders. To go up to Aberdeen, which was the ground of where I made my debut, and to win it in the bizarre fashion that we won it with Stevie Kirk coming on and as a sub, and it was his first touch of the ball, and he wasn't even supposed to take the free kick. He was supposed to go in at the back post, and Coop was supposed to chip up the cross for him. And Kirky just said, you know, forget that, David, just give me the ball. And David just squared it to Steven with his first touch. He smashes it past Theo Schnelders, and you're like, what the heck have we just done, you know? You know, I think when the final whistle went that day, you know, it was one of those ones that I'm like, did we just beat Aberdeen at Pittodrie 1-0 and I kept a clean sheet? I'm like, it was kind of surreal, and it didn't even sink in, I think, until the following day that what we'd actually done. But again, you know, that was the type of players that we were, you know. And I do remember a couple of the players in the dressing room after the game saying to themselves, I think we could win this year, guys. And we didn't really take a lot of stock in that. But kind of as the games went by, we kind of started to think, I think our name is on this cup. You know, and I think, you know, you always knew you had Rangers and Celtic to get past. But again, you always hoped that maybe they would draw each other in one of the rounds, and maybe we would squeak past them, you know. So, but then the next round of the draw gave us a decent chance.
That's it. I suppose the Aberdeen game, the Celtic semi-final, and then the fantastic final always get a lot of column inches and are talked about in great depth. But both Falkirk and Morton presented real challenges of their own, particularly Morton, who, after getting the draw at Fir Park, then took us 120 minutes to extra time and then penalties. Falkirk, the 4-2 game, could have swung both ways at times, yeah, as well. It could have been also different, couldn't it?
It could have been, but yeah, I think the Falkirk game, I think, you know, it's one of those ones where it was such an open game, such an exciting game, that and we never really worried about it, because we always felt that, you know, give Davey the ball and, you know, we'll score against them again, you know. But the Morton one for me was the one that was really, really, really the sticky point, because obviously I went on to realise this when I went on to play for them and obviously manage them as well for a short time. But the when you go to Capello, that is, if you think Fir Park is a difficult place to go, Capello is on a wet, stormy, green up night, you know, with the Morton fans. That was a really, really tough game. And to be fair, I hoped it went to penalties. And not just because I think I'm okay at penalties. It's just that I don't think I've ever lost in a penalty kick shootout. You know, until that point in time, whether it was with the reserves or with the first team. But I just didn't have a fear when it went into penalty kicks. And, you know, when Colin O'Neill stepped up to take the winning penalty, I'm like, this ball's going to go into the net on its own. oh, this ball's going to go into the net with the goalie and the ball into the net, because I knew he wasn't going to miss, because I knew how he was going to take it, because he told me beforehand, and I'm like, he just hit that as sweet as a nut, and I'm like, oh, that was it, you know. So I was glad I actually went to penalties, because I feared that we could come unstuck against Morton, and because they were a hard-working, fighting side at that time.
The semi-final against Celtic, it's well known you don't get two shots at Celtic, do you? So that was another theory that was completely blown out of the water. And that night at Hampden, and after such a difficult opening to the match, where I think anyone will look back on it and say it was a case of just surviving, just keeping in the game.
Exactly. To the
recovery, it was just phenomenal.
Well, I think what happened was at halftime, you know, the manager said to us, I don't think we can play any worse. We've got nothing to lose. And I remember the players all getting beside each other before we left the dressing room saying, the last thing that we do is give up. The last thing that we're going to do is sit back against Celtic in the second half. Let's go have a go at them and let's see what they're made of. And it could well have been Kirky that said that, I have no idea, but somebody's like, I can't say what exactly the words were, because you probably couldn't broadcast them, but it was more to the point of, let's just get into these people and let's see what they're made of. And in the second half, we were a transformed team.
Yeah, it was like nothing I've ever seen in the celebrations, and the shock of the Celtic players' faces will live forever. It was a incredible night, and capped off by one of the greatest goals that were ever scored as well by a Motherwell player, with Colin O'Neill's.
Well, I think it shows that even in the modern day, why do you sit back against teams like Celtic and Rangers? You know, they're full of great players. You know, and if you sit back against them, they're eventually going to punish you. And we just decided, if we're going to get beat, we're going to get beat by trying. And we just decided, let's get stuck into them, and it was just that two of the goals were just goals that you would never see in your life. Colin O'Neill's goal, and people don't remember how wet and muddy Hampden was that night. And for Colin to pick that ball up off the surface the way he did, and to rifle past, you know, a great goalkeeper in Pat Bonner, it was a superb strike. And then Kirky's goal was just, I don't think anyone in the stadium knew it had even gone in. I think the only person in the stadium that knew that it was a goal was the linesman, because he was halfway up to the halfway line, you know, waving his flag, and everyone's like, I don't even know if the commentators realised it was a goal. And it was just an amazing goal, you know, and that made it 4-2, and it was just like, you know, it just capped an amazing night, an amazing comeback, and it just showed the character of the team.
That's it. Then after the victory, obviously it was all the lead up to the final, but there was still the victory over Rangers in between, in the last 25 years. Sorry.
I mean, it's, when you think about it, you've just beaten Celtic, and then you turn around and you beat Rangers. That, you know, it's like, if people didn't believe in Motherwell at that point in time, I mean, I don't know when you ever would. And I think it showed it wasn't just a flash in the pan. You know what I'm saying? You know, to beat Celtic and Rangers within the span of a week is almost unheard of, even in the modern game. And as I said earlier, I think that just solidified the players and just gave us belief in what we were doing.
No, well, that's exactly it. My question was going to be that the finals since then, in 2005, the League Cup final, and the Scottish Cup final in 2011, I think in both occasions, the players have been slightly overawed by the occasion. They've not done themselves justice, despite the fact that both sides were good footballing sides, and sides that were capable of giving Rangers and Celtic, respectively, very good games. It just didn't happen on the big stage. Was that the win, the Rangers win, that maybe just completely hit home, that we can go into this final, we can we will win this final. It's not a case of any ifs, buts and maybes. We are going to go and we're going to win that Scottish Cup.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, I think Tommy McLean needs to take a lot of credit for that, because he didn't set us up to sit back and defend, you know. He set us up to go out and beat them, you know. No matter who it was, we're going to go and we're going to play them, and we're going to beat them, you know. And the players believed in that, you know. And it's not quite modern day, but I even keep relaying stories about Kevin Keegan when he managed his teams. He's like, I don't care what the score is, as long as we score one more goal than the opposition, you know. And it created so many great games to watch and so many attacking options. And in the modern day game, you know, when the other team get the ball, the other team just sit off and put 11 players behind the ball. It's a bit boring sometimes, you know. But Tommy McLean set us up to go and play. And I think the fact that we beat Rangers and Celtic proved his point, that you can go and play against these players. You can give them respect, but go out and play them. And if they beat you, they beat you a fair and square way. But, you know, to sit off them would be dangerous. And not only that, I think Dundee United had beaten us twice already that season. And we obviously were being viewed, I think, even though we beat Rangers and Celtic, I think we were viewed as the underdogs because Dundee United had beaten us twice already that year. And I think that helped the players relax a little bit as well, mentally. You know, we were confident in our own ability, there's no doubt about it. We were confident that we were going to go and win it. But we certainly weren't afraid of Dundee United, knowing that, you know, OK, they might have beaten us at Fir Park and they might have beaten us at Tannadice, but the game's now at Hampden. And we also knew that Dundee United hadn't had a great record at Hampden in years gone by. So I think all those things culminated in the calmness in the players, and the thought process was, I think we are going to win it. I mean, you can't possibly beat Aberdeen away, Celtic at Hampden, and not believe you can't win the cup. And I think that's truly, you know, all those factors kind of all rolled into the thought process of, well, we can't possibly lose this. And I think it showed on the day that even though they kept pegging us back, we still weren't afraid and we still went on to play. You know, and I think a great credit has to go the experienced players, especially David Cooper, who, you know, could, when you knew you had him in your side, you just knew something could happen. You know, so I think the team were supremely confident, but they were keeping it well hidden, I think.
The final was obviously labelled the family final. And a kind of ironic, cruel twist to proceedings in the build-up. There was tragedy for the McLean family. And I suppose the media being the media, it did create a fair bit of headlines and took a wee bit of the focus off the football in the days leading up. How difficult was that for a family football club to have to deal with things like that? And how did Tommy McLean react? Was he around in the days leading up to the game?
Well, obviously he had the funeral and stuff like that, so he was gone for a couple of days. But the thing about it was, you know, if you know Tommy, his whole demeanour would be, get on with it. Life goes on, you know. And Tam Forsyth was the assistant manager. And Tam Forsyth was a very, very good coach. And the guys loved Tam. So, you know, Tommy McLean didn't always take the training session each week. So, you know, Tommy Forsyth taking the practice sessions or the training sessions was no different for us. We were used to that, you know. And, you know, by that time, you know, when you're like a week away from the cup final, there's nothing really that anybody can say or anybody can do. It's time to do it on the field. You know, all the preparations were done, all the tactics were looked into, all the set plays were looked into, you know, all the fitness had been done. We were ready to go, and it was just a case of keeping the players ticking over until game day. You know, and Tommy would be the first to say that the game was not about him, the game was about the players. You know, and I can agree with that, but I also think that the game was about the fans. You know, and I think that was a huge thing, was you know, the funeral will take care of itself, you know, but you guys still have a job to do, and the job is to win the cup for the fans. That's the kind of mentality that Tommy McLean had. He never really looked for any self-praise. He always wanted to give that to the players.
There's very little that could have prepared you for walking out at Hampden, though, and seeing all these fans decked out in claret and amber, and even a tangerine and black as well. A huge, huge crowd. You'll never, ever see with Motherwell supporters, maybe ever again.
That's at the Black Tie event last week. I had to say that was the special moment in my heart was, you know, when we came out the tunnel and we lined up, I was standing next to Luke Nyholt, and I have a cracking picture of Luke Nyholt looking up into the main stands, and I'm looking off to my left going, where did all these people come from, you know, like, there was like 27,500 Motherwell fans there, and I'm like, whoa, wait, where did they come from? Because we had no idea how many tickets had been sold. We knew there had been quite a few sold, but we had no idea that it was a complete and utter sellout. What a fantastic surprise it was to walk out just before the kickoff and see all those fans. It was just an absolutely amazing scene, and one that was definitely the highlight for me of that day, was because I didn't really remember too much after that anyway, but I did remember the reaction of the fans, and ultimately that's who we did it for, you know. We're not doing it for ourselves, we're doing it for the people who live, breathe Motherwell, which is our fans, and it was just an amazing day, and I'm just so proud for them that, you know, we managed to break that 39 year jinx, if you like.
As far as cup final days go, yours was slightly different than your average one, where you would perhaps lift the trophy, do a lap of honour, go out to the pub at night. it was incredible tenacity you showed to make it through the 120 minutes in the first place, but how difficult physically was it, and how difficult was it when that final whistle went soak it up and enjoy the success?
Really, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, a lot of the pictures that have been taken after the game, you can obviously see how white my face is, and, you know, and even the interview and the grimace in my face was just, you know, I didn't know what was wrong. I knew there was something wrong with me. I didn't know to the extent of what it was. I mean, every time I kicked the ball, there was like a searing pain went up through my stomach. You know, and I knew there was, because I could feel something almost bubbling around in my stomach. So I knew something was up. But then again, we didn't have subs, you know. One sub is Colin O'Neill, who could barely walk with his knee. And then the other one was Stevie Kirk, who was the one that kept scoring all the goals. So it's like, you know, if you look in hindsight, if Stevie Kirk had gone in goal for me that day, Stevie Kirk would not have been on the field to score the winning goal. So, as fate would have it, you know, I'm not saying that that's what my thought process was at the time, but it's kind of almost like karma, you know, that, you know, I played on and did what I could, you know, and if I hadn't done that, Kirky would never have been on the field to score the winning goal. So, you know, the rest of the game's a bit of a blur, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, and obviously my performance was, you know, hindered because of my injury. Not just the movement, the lack of movement that I had to my right-hand side, because I got whacked on my left-hand side, so that was the leg that I used to push off of. You know, so I was struggling with that part of the game. And then obviously because you're in pain and obviously you're struggling, then your decision-making process, whether it come out or not come out, you know, is hindered as well. So it's all connected. And, you know, I'm just so thankful to guys like Phil O'Donnell and Davey Cooper and Chris McCart and Craig Patterson, who protected me, and then obviously Stevie Kirk getting the winning goal. You know, I've just got to thank those guys for looking after me. And making sure that, you know, we did win the cup, because I honestly think we deserved to win that game. we were ahead three times, and you know, I think we deserved to win it that day for sure. But what a great advert for Scottish football, and you know, what a great way for our fans to finish their season.
Yeah, it'll without doubt go down as, in my opinion, the best Scottish Cup final of all time. There may be a few argue that it's the very best, but certainly in the top one, as far as I'm concerned. How much did you manage to take in the celebrations in the evening and then the bus?
Not really any of it, to be perfectly honest with you. I do remember being interviewed by Rob McLean on the field after the game, and he goes, you know, how do you feel? And I went, really? He's going to ask me that question? You know, and I think I just said something about this is what it's all about, and I think I turned around and pointed to the Motherwell fans who were going absolutely crazy behind me. And I truly mean this, it was all about the fans. I mean, you know, we were paid professionals back then, but the fans, you know, without the fans we couldn't do it, you know. And they, just the look on most of these guys' faces when I turned around and looked at them, I've never seen a group of fans that emotionally charged. You know, and I do remember that saying that, because I've obviously seen it on the TV a couple of times. But the rest of it, like walking around the park, I don't even remember walking up to get my medal. And I don't remember some pictures that I've seen after on the field, lifting the cup with Phil O'Donnell, the two of us holding the cup. I don't even remember that. And that's me just seeing it in pictures, photographs for the first time. So I don't have a lot of recollection of that. And then that night I was in hospital. I went from the ground straight to hospital. To be fair, my family were at Fir Park waiting to celebrate with me. And it was, it wasn't until Ian Angus came, because I think he got drug tested after the game. He was a couple of hours later. He came, and people are like, where's Ali? And they're all like, you don't know? And my brother's saying, of course my brother swears, he goes, I don't know what. He goes, your brother's in hospital. So my whole family had to hightail it to the Victoria Hospital. I never even made it to Fir Park for the celebration that night. The only thing I did do was sign myself out of the hospital for the bus top tour. Because as a little boy, I've always dreamed of doing that with Motherwell, and I was not about to miss that. But I don't even remember that day, to be perfectly honest with you, because after the bus tour, I had to go straight back to the hospital. So I can't say I had fond memories of the celebrations afterwards, because I never really got to celebrate it, to be perfectly honest with you.
No, but you've kind of answered my next question then, but you look at, for talking to Leicester City's achievements this season and the fantastic celebrations that they've had. I was going to ask, is that the point where when you're on that open top bus or when you're back at your home stadium celebrating, where it sinks in the magnitude of your achievements? Because, well, we're sitting here 25 years on today, and Motherwell haven't tasted success in a national competition since. It was a massive thing for the town, for the fans, for the players involved in that day. It'll never be forgotten.
Yeah.
There's just so much emotional attachement to it, isn't there?
Well, there is. I mean, yeah, I've been to several Motherwell games. Every time I come home from the United States, I make a point of going up to Fir Park, and I can still hear the emotion in the fans' voices, you know, when they play. I know what it's all about, because again, I was there as a professional for 11 years. It always kind of annoys me a little bit when, you know, like I do the halftime draw at Fir Park, that the announcer says I was there for 8 seasons. Like 8 seasons, I was there for 11 years as a professional, 1981 to 1992, when I eventually signed for Rangers. So, you know, obviously people can't do their math, but you know, the fans. You know, I always had a very, very, very close affection with the fans. You know, I tried to meet up with some of them from time to time. You know, I would hang out with them, you know, after the game in the club and sign autographs and stuff like that. Because, you know, that was my Motherwell to this day is still my club. You know, I was a boyhood supporter. I'm still very close with guys like Willie Pettigrew, guys like that from that, Bobby Graham from that era. I'm still friends with these guys when I see them. You know, so, you know, I have a close, close, close connection with the Motherwell fans. And I always will, you know. You know, although I went on and played for other clubs, you know, Motherwell will always be my hometown team and will always be the team that I look for the first result every Saturday. And, you know, without the fans, you know, you've got nothing. I think a lot of players don't realise that. Without your fan base, you don't have anything. And for me, you know, they are without a doubt the most loyal fans that I think I've played in front of. You know, and not only loyal but supportive. You know, I've played in many clubs where, you know, as soon as something goes wrong, you know, the fans are out in fury, sack the manager or whatever. But you know, Motherwell fans have been fantastic to me across the years, and I'll never forget them for that.
That must make it particularly special then, that you're able to get back to Scotland for the series of events that have been taking place over the last couple of weeks, get to relive the glories of that day in May, and also the bond that's been built up amongst many members of that squad. It seems it's a very tight-knit group, isn't it?
It's very tight, and you know, obviously, when we all met up last week, it was just like yesterday. You know, it's just like, oh, how we doing? You know, you know, like when you were that close, you can be out of touch for a few years, and you come back, and the next minute is, you know, you're giving each other hugs and stuff like that, and going, how's it going, mate? You know, how's life? You know. And we were very much like that. And last weekend was so nice. Everybody's just like, you know, giving each other hugs and saying, how you doing, buddy? And, you know, it's just like we only saw them yesterday. And I think that proves how close we all were, you know. But I'm just delighted to be able to come back and actually probably for the first time ever celebrate the cup final with the fans up in the Davy Cooper suite tonight. So I might be having a wee dram or two and toast the fans tonight, because this will be the first chance that I probably had to actually celebrate it with them.
Don't think that anyone can blame me for that, certainly not. There's obviously a great deal of poignancy about the celebrations as well, and the absolute travesty that there is a few members of the side that aren't there to join us celebrating tonight. And I think as a family club, the club has been brought even closer together by real, real tragedies over the last couple of years and beyond. Well, Coop was 1995, but that must be difficult to comprehend at times, the scale of the tragedy that's surrounded.
Well, all four guys were fantastic guys. They were all great players. They were all super nice people. They were all friends of mine. You know, none more so than Davy, because, you know, Davy Cooper actually didn't drive. So what happened was I ended up being Davy's chauffeur. So for a couple of years, Davy and I were very, very close. And literally went everywhere together. So, you know, I think, you know, every time I come back to Hamilton, I go down to his statue at the Hamilton Palace, and, you know, I have a little chat with Davy. And I did that on Sunday when I got here. I went down and had a little chat with him for 5 minutes. And it was actually funny, because when I was ready to leave, a bird decided to shit on my shoulder. And I looked up and I went, Davy Cooper, you son of a... You know, I said, that's your sense of humour, Coop, you know. I said, then, you know, I just thought, you're up there watching this, Davy, aren't you? I could tell, you know, because that was his sense of humour, you know. He's such a dry sense of humour, you know. But I actually posted that, and the amount of people that actually remarked and laughed and said, oh my God, that's so Coop's sense of humour. I felt that that was a sign for Coop, you know. So I was very close to him. And then obviously Phil O'Donnell was 18 years of age. He was just a young kid, but he was a super, super nice kid. He was very level-headed, a nice, quiet guy, and just had a great engine in him. Jamie Dolan used to pal about with me and Colin and Neil all the time. And Paul McGillan and I used to travel together to and from training. So I was very close with all four of them, and just absolutely gutted that, we lose all four of them at such a young age. And, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, there's never a day goes by when somebody mentions the Scottish Cup final that I can't not think of Paul and Jamie and Phil and Davey, you know. There's not a moment goes by when we talk about the Cup final that we don't remember those guys, because they were a huge part of it, they'll always, be in my heart, and they'll always, I'll always have fond memories of them.
Yeah, that's it. I apologise for, it's always a very difficult question to ask when you're speaking to guys involved around that time, and of course I'm sure it's a very difficult question to answer as well, but I think what's a fantastic legacy for all four of these guys is how highly they were all thought of. I've never ever heard a cross word about any of them, which is a real testimony to their characters.
I mean, everybody in life has flaws, we all know that, but these four guys were just genuinely phenomenal people, on and off the park, just wonderful, wonderful human beings. And I've yet, as you say, to meet someone that would say a bad word about them, and we're not trying to be condescending just because they're no longer with us, but no, genuinely, I've never ever heard anyone say a bad word about them. And you know what, if I ever met anyone that would say something bad about them, those words would never be allowed to come out of their mouth, because it wouldn't be true. It was just so nice last Sunday that I got a chance to speak to Davey's wife, Christine, and Phil's dad and his brother, George. So it was good that they turned up, and it was nice that I got a chance to, say hi to those guys and just pass on my best wishes to them. So, it was a nice little chance for me, especially, so that they could see me and the genuine respect and sympathy that I had for those guys.
You didn't give them your dry cleaning bill, did you?
No, but everybody seemed to charge all their drinks to me. But that would be the one thing that there's no way I would ever wash that shirt now, because I know that the Coop's up there laughing at me, so I ain't going to wash that shirt. That shirt's going to get put in a piece of plastic and kept for posterity, I can tell you.
Your Motherwell playing career obviously ended after the Scottish Cup final. Quite a way to end, but was there a bit of regret that the contract situation couldn't be resolved, and you spent a year almost in limbo before joining Rangers?
Obviously, you've got to understand that I was injured anyway. I was going to be out for quite some. I was out for about eight to 12 weeks after the Cup final. Anyway, the one thing about it, as I'll say, is I didn't want to leave. But there's way to word things, and there's ways that you can gloss over things. The comments were made that I was going to be the highest ever paid Motherwell player, and we're talking about £300 a week. Okay, so we're not talking, you're not talking about tens of thousands of, you're talking £300 a week was the offer, and every other Motherwell player that was in that squad was on the same wage, exactly the same wage. So people coming out and saying, but you were going to be made the highest ever paid Motherwell player, I'm like, well, hang on a second. You could say that about the other 13 players. We were all exactly on the same salary. And then the other aspect was that, I'd been there for 11 years. And I think part of it was the testimonial thing that didn't come to fruition. You know, and I felt as though, you know, not necessarily should I get one, but I think I kind of deserved one. And that was part of the, you know, that was part of the problem, you know. So, you know, it wasn't anything to do with the money part of it. It was more to do with the testimonial side of it. You know, and I kind of found that a little bit awkward to accept. Just, you know, and obviously when I look back on it, a few of those players that were in that cup final have since had testimonials, you know. So, you know, that was kind of more the problem area than it was the salary, and I really didn't want to leave. But I kind of went through, shall we say, a hard time at that point in time with the coaching staff. I had to train on my own for a long period of time before I eventually went down to Liverpool on loan. You know, and obviously I found out through Graeme Souness at Liverpool that Rangers had already made me an offer like 9 months earlier, and Motherwell kept it to themselves. So it was a little bit of a there's blame on both sides, you know, there always is. But it was an unhappy way for me to leave Motherwell because I really didn't want to leave. A couple of the players came round to the house to check on me, and Davey was the first one to come round and check on me and see how things were going, and you know, while I was injured and stuff like that. So it was nice that the players came round to see me and wish me well and stuff like that. But eventually I did go back to Fir Park when I was fit, and obviously things moved on from there. So, but I'd like to think that I served my time with Motherwell. I mean, I was there in the boys' club from 11 years of age until I left when I was, 26? So I was at Motherwell a long, long time, and proud of the time that I was there.
When you mentioned the testimonials, I think that's been a bugbear of many supporters. Even look at the Dougie Arnott's testimonial, which was maybe 9-10 years overdue when it actually took place from when he last kicked a ball with Motherwell.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to see kind of plans take place and then things stagnate a bit for whatever reason. Personally, supporters, we don't get to see quite what goes on behind the scenes and what the politics are behind these games.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and by the way, there's problems on both sides. There always is. So, you know, but the way it was kind of worded at the time was it was all my fault, and I'm like, well, why don't you just take a little bit of responsibility yourself and just say, look, there's problems on both ends, you know? But it was, you know, the wordage was I didn't like the wordage in the press, and it was making me look out as though I was a money grabber and I was going to be made the highest paid Motherwell player ever. Do you honestly think I was getting paid more than Davy Cooper? Not a chance in hell. So, you know, those were the things that really bugged me, and I could tell, you know, that it was going downhill from there. And you know, and I was trying to be made to look like the bad guy in front of the people that I love. You know, the Motherwell fans were my family, so you know that really didn't sit well with me that they were trying to push me against the Motherwell fans, which I didn't really like that part of things, but. That was a long, long time ago. I've well got over that, you know. I moved on and had a great career, you know, at other clubs as well. But I'll never forget my time at Motherwell because that was the club that gave me my chance. And when I saw Davy Hay on Sunday at Parkhead, that was the first person I made a beeline for, and I shook his hand and thanked him for signing me. And, you know, it was a great little moment for me to meet the guy that put me on the path to Motherwell. So just an amazing career for me and an amazing memory.
Well, yeah, that's it. You obviously went on and achieved success at various other clubs, league title trophies with both United and Rangers, a League Cup with Rangers, and then a runners-up medal Dundee United finally gaining a wee bit of retribution. I don't think they ever will get the full retribution for the Scottish Cup final. It's always fantastic to see guys, especially guys like yourself, who are now moved to the opposite end of the world, still coming back to Fir Park and still holding such a big place in his heart for the football club. Times have obviously changed, and it's just a real shame that you had to witness the demolition job at Celtic Park on Saturday. But
scorelines don't bother me. You know, for whatever reason, the players that gave Celtic a right good go at Fir Park a few weeks earlier and just narrowly lost 2-1. And I just couldn't believe what I was watching. I was like, at least have a go at them, you know. But, you know, obviously there was some things said in the press about wage cuts and, you know, it was a nothing game for Motherwell and stuff like that. And I just felt like, well, come on, guys. You've got Motherwell fans that are travelling to Parkhead paying good money for the last game of the season to support you guys. And I'm sure the players weren't thinking about it, but, you know, I just felt like, go and have a go at them, for crying out loud. Don't sit back. But the problem is, once they sat back, that they couldn't break that trend. And, you know, to be fair to Celtic, their movement and their finishing was fantastic that day. And, you know, I felt bad for the Motherwell goalkeeper. I think that was his last game. And I'm like, poor guy, you know. Unfortunate way to go out. But, you know, I went. That was the first thing that I wanted to do, is I wanted to watch as many Motherwell games as I could. I watched them against St Johnstone at Fir Park. I went up to Dingwall and watched them play very well against Ross County. And then obviously went to watch them at Parkhead. So at least I got to witness one victory, so that was good.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, when we look back over the course of the season, in the back of what was a narrow escape last season, a fifth place finish, some young guys coming through, the fantastic success in the Youth Cup final, there is positives there and reasons to be fairly optimistic going forward.
I would be very optimistic if we could keep the players. But obviously, you know, the under-20s, fantastic achievement by them. I'm so proud of them. Proud for the players and proud for the staff and their families. But you know what it's like. You know, these kids are now going to attract attention from other clubs. And, you know, I just can't see us hanging on to our young talent for too much longer, you know, and that's always been a problem for Motherwell. You create great young talent, and then unfortunately, to balance the books, we have to sell them. I just don't see that ever changing, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, but that's, you know, that's the manager's role, is to make sure that the squad's healthy and we've got a squad that can compete. You know, not necessarily to stay in the Premier League, but to push for a European place. You know, and I think, you know, can we win a championship? I don't see why not. If you go and play Celtic at their own game and you go play against Rangers at their own game, like we used to do, you know, show them respect, but go and have a go at them. You're never going to get points off Rangers and Celtic unless you have a go at them. Because they're used to attacking, they're just not used to defending. So, you know, turn the tables on them a little bit. And I just wish that, you know, if we're going to lose 7-0, I'd rather lose 7-0 having a go at Celtic rather than sitting back, you know, and not offering anything, you know. So I just hope that Motherwell can hang on to the youth talent and develop them. And, I mean, it's easy for me to say, why don't you give the under-20s a chance? Put the under-20 team on the field. I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have lost 7-0. So give the youth a chance and see how it progresses. You know, but again, the fear of relegation is there. So it's a very, very difficult balancing act for the manager and the coaching staff, is, you know, how much youth to integrate into the team and how much experience you need as well. So, but, you know, that's why they get paid for that job.
I switched my microphone off.
Oh, that's okay.
Sorry, I don't know.
I thought you'd hung up on me.
No. Ali, on behalf of myself, Jay and Buster, who unfortunately can't be present today, I'd like to thank you very much for your time. It's been really, really insightful, and I could personally sit for another hour and talk away. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. That's Jay and Buster's loss, you know. You do realise that. That's their loss, you know. So it's been a pleasure chatting with you, my friend. And, you know, I just hope and wish Motherwell every success in next season. And hopefully they can build on it. And to be perfectly honest with you, and I truly, truly mean this, I hope Motherwell win the Scottish Cup as soon as possible.
I really do.
I wish the manager and all the players every success, and if they could just win that Scottish Cup, then I wouldn't need to keep talking about the 25th anniversary, the 26th. You do realise if I make the 50th anniversary, I'm going to be very unhappy with you guys.
Well, you can't blame me personally, but we'll...
No, I'm going to blame you personally.
Well, as I was saying before I switched my mic off as well, it's been nice being able to catch up with you on social media and see you and the family looking so healthy and happy. I wish you all the best going forward, and hopefully this won't be the last time that we get a chance to sit down and talk all things Motherwell. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Take care.
Motherwell Football Club.
Ah, different class. I don't remember anything about the second half, to be honest. It's all blur. Dizzy and double vision of second half. The last support, look at them, they're brilliant.
And then you get the Wounded Warrior tag. What exactly happened?
I don't know, I think it was John Platt. I don't know, it was his knee or what, he caught me right in the stomach. I don't know whether I've torn stomach muscles or what, but I'm still lucky if I can stand up just now. I'm absolutely gone. My legs are gone as well.
And as you were saying, an amazing support from people, some of them without jobs. Tommy McLean's been making this point all along.
This is absolutely marvellous. They're absolutely in their thousands. Nobody thought this would be a sellout, and it's all credit to these people behind us.
Well done.
Thanks a lot.